one of my favorite groups, the Red Stick Ramblers. Bring It On Down to My House, Honey, from their CD entitled Bring It On Down. This is Sound Health on BBS Radio. Thank you for tuning into the show. On this program, Sound Health, we try to bring you ideas and information about self-responsibility in your life, your relationships, your job, with your family, and our guests tonight reflect that theme. We're going to be talking to the authors of How to Create a Magical Relationship, Ariel and Shia Crane, just kind of in honor of Valentine's Day. There's a subtitle to this book, and I just had it, but it's such a promise. It's like we can change your relationship in three steps and make it absolutely magical. Here it is, three simple ideas that will instantaneously transform your love life. I love that idea, and I want to read you a review. This is from Wisdom Magazine. I found this on Amazon. It says that this book by these two people, a masterpiece, unprecedented by any other relationship genre book this reviewer has ever come across. I found that incredible. We'll be with those authors in just a minute after a word, short word from our sponsor. As most of you know, we're supported by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology. And at that research institute, we create software. And we have a clinic that deals with vocal profiling, analyzing the frequencies of what's in your voice and what's not there, so that we can look at things like your personality, your nutritional needs, your muscle status, how to manage your diet, look at your immune system, look at your heart. We even have one on aging and sex factors. It looks at the biochemistry of being in love. One of our latest projects is with the U.S. Army. It's the Traumatic Brain Injury Project. So if any of you want to bring vocal profiling to your community, we have classes that can help you do that so that you can help some of these Okay, caller will be with you in just a minute, if you can just hang on for us till we do the intro. We also have another project going on. We are giving away software, the Nano Voice. It's for free. There's been thousands of downloads, lots of questions about this InnerSense software and finding out about yourself and other people. So we're going to be doing a class, a free class, on February 18th. From 6 to 8, so if anybody would like to join us with that, please call me at, please write me at Sherry, S-H-A-R-R-Y, on air, at gmail.com. I guess you can call me. That number's 740-698-9119. We'll post that on the radio description of this show. We are so thankful that thousands and thousands, about 11,000 of you so far, have downloaded this free program. And when I say free, absolutely no questions asked. We don't ask you your email address. We don't ask you anything. It's totally unlimited that you can make copies of this program, give it out to your friends. We think it's a way that people can find their inner self without all of these parental tapes and shoulds and oughts and peer pressures. And so we want people to have this, and we're very happy that is going to be happening. I don't know if we should, I think we'll wait for the caller, because we did put out a printout that we're going to have these special guests on the show. And if you want to download that program, it's Nano, N-A-N-O, Voice, Nano Voice, one word, .org. If you want to attend the class, totally free, or download the manual, you'll need to get in touch with us at Sherry on air, S-H-A-R-R-Y, on air, at gmail.com, or just plain old class at vocal profiling. Okay, we're going to introduce our guests, and then we'll go to our caller. Thank you for holding on, caller. Ariel and
Shia.
I knew how to pronounce it before the show.
Welcome.
You had it perfect. Ariel and Shia Kane.
That's
it's kind of not like Fred and Mary or Mary and Fred, so we understand.
Very poetic sounding. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Are you you're a couple?
Are we are. We've been together 26 years.
Isn't this the day after Valentine's Day?
It is.
Yeah, we've been together 26 years, married 24.
And
we're still pretty much in love and celebrating our lives together.
And, you know, How to Create a Magical Relationship won the Nautilus Book Award for Best Relationship Book. And
then McGraw-Hill bought it from us and republished it.
So here we are.
Well, it's beautiful. I saw it on Amazon, and we have lots and lots of questions. We have a caller, which is unusual this early in the show. We didn't even give out the number yet, but they must have gotten it from our announcement. Would you mind if we took the caller now?
Absolutely. We're ready.
Okay, caller, you are on the air.
Okay, hi, Sherry. This is James in Pacifica, California.
Hi, James.
Hi there. I realize that you're doing a show on Valentine's Day tonight, but I just had a quick question. I just wanted to know if you've had any success in treating kidney failure with the sound device.
Yes, we have. Would you call the office and we'll get you some information, or you can go to Nutra, N-U-T-R-A, Sounds, NutraSounds.com, and it'll give you all the profiles of the kinds of things that we work here with at the Research Institute.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Okay, and you could call us tomorrow, too, and I'll talk to you about it.
Okay, will do.
Thanks,
Sherry. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, guys, would you tell us about this wonderful book? Whose idea was it to write this?
I'm not sure. We are so dovetailing and in sync, it's kind of hard to tell who thinks what first because we tend to
finish each other's sentences.
There you go. It's our style of operating and communicating, and so I can't tell you who thought about it first, but I think the inspiration for it came because it didn't seem to matter where we went or when we wrote our first book, Working on Yourself Doesn't Work, and we were going to different health expos and different places to talk about transforming your life and being in the moment, people always came up to us and said, oh, you're those relationship people. And we realized that there must be something about our relationship and our way of relating that seemed to be noticeable to people, and we figured we might as well articulate what it is that's could support people in having a magical relationship of their own.
Is this your first book?
No, this is our second book. And we've written three.
Shia, you have disappeared.
Where did you... Shia went away.
How about now?
Yes, that is great.
Okay,
I'm back. I pressed a little thing on my phone.
And muted him.
It did me in. Yeah, this is our second book. We've written three. The first was called Working on Yourself Doesn't Work.
The three simple ideas that will instantaneously transform your life.
The second is How to Create a Magical Relationship. And the third is called Being Here, Modern Day Tales of Enlightenment.
I don't know about that one. We'll have to have you talk about it a bit.
We'll make sure you get a copy too, Sherry.
It's basically
story format so that people aren't necessarily being taught ideas. They get to discover themselves like reading a novel.
In the story. Short stories.
That's a wonderful idea.
Go right ahead.
I was going to ask you, is a magical relationship an ideal one? Is that what everybody should look for, a magical one?
I think what people should look for is the relationship that they currently have. So if you aren't with somebody, you look to the relationship you have with yourself. If you are with somebody, you get interested in how it is rather than how you prefer it to be.
See, our approach, Sherry, is anthropological. It's not psychological. So we're not really interested in why people are the way they are. We've discovered that if you get into the current moment of your life, the present moment of now, your life transforms as a byproduct of getting into the present moment. And our technology is based in getting people here and now, and then the story of their life loses any power over them. They become free to be, but truly free in that they're not living their life in opposition to or agreement with anybody else. You know, a lot of us, our lives are based in not being like our parents or the institutions we grew up in. Rather than living our life, we're not living their lives. And so rather than live life in response to others, we've discovered that if you get into the current moment, you become appropriate to your life, and all those things that were issues dissolve.
So you're kind of asking people to give up their past and be their moment.
Well, you can't really give up your past.
But it can give you up.
Or you can give up your working with it to try to change what's already happened, then you can't do anything about that, really.
It's all the crud. Well, the book says three simple solutions that will transform your love life forever. Are you going to tell us what those are?
Okay, they're ideas.
And they're not solutions. But
okay,
they... the first principle or idea is that anything you resist persists, grows stronger, and dominates your life. Now, in the area of relationship, it dominates your relationship. So that if there's anything about the person you're in relationship with that you resist, that's all you think about, really.
Okay, that's the first idea. We'll give you all three, and then we'll give you a practical example of it. That'd be good, because it's like, huh? But once you get it together and you look at it in a practical format, it really makes sense. Second principle is you can only be exactly as you are right now. Now, a visual example of that is this. If it was possible, we had a friend recently just show us how to do video conferencing on our computer, iChat. So if we actually could snap a picture of everybody listening to the show right now and then show them a picture, they could only be doing exactly what they were doing the moment the camera shutter opened and closed. So if they were sitting, they could only be sitting. If you're standing, you could only be standing. In any given moment, you can only be exactly where you are, as you are, how you are. Does that make sense to you, Sherry?
Yes.
Now, the challenge is we all have these really facile minds, so we can come up with all sorts of alternative fantasies of where we could be, how we could be, or how we should be. But what we're talking about is a word that we made up. It's called isness. The isness of something. We're just looking at what is, not our fantasies about what could be.
Or our preferences about how it should be.
That's the second idea.
And the third idea is if you see something about yourself or your partner and you don't judge it, it completes itself in the moment you see it. So any behavior that you see and don't judge, don't try to change or fix, don't try to make it better, but just see it, that's enough for it to complete itself the instant you see it. So the instantaneous transformation. It doesn't take place over time.
Now, here's an example of all three of the principles. We lead workshops mainly in New York City on Monday nights. And when we do them, we call them Monday Night Alive, and we put a poster on the door just to let people know what's happening. And a man was walking by one night. His name is Cecil. And he decided to come in and join us. And he is a fellow who works at the UN. He's a diplomat because we do our workshops near the UN. And he came in and he sat in the back of the room and he didn't say anything for the evening, but we were talking about the three principles. And he came back the next week and stood up and talked to everybody. And here's what he had to say. That 2 years before, he had been working at the United Nations, and his mother had passed away while he was there. And he had felt tremendous guilt and shame that he wasn't there at the time of her passing. It was just a really difficult thing for him. It was the first thing he'd wake up with in the morning. It plagued him through his day. He had enormous guilt and wishes it would have been different. But he really heard the second principle and the first, that what you resist persists, grows stronger, which was true in his case. He could only be where he was at the time of his mother's passing. He could not have been there for no other reason than the fact that he wasn't. And anything he allowed to be, of course, completes itself. And he said the strangest thing was when he really saw the truth of these ideas, he slept through the night for the first time in a long time. The guilt fell away on its own. He felt lighter and freer. That once he saw that there was no possibility for it to have been different, shame and guilt and regret fell away, and it was a miracle. Transformation is one of these things that happen when you get in sync with the moment, and what falls away is all of the pain that follows you around for things that you have no control over.
And that you've resisted, which has kept them around.
This brings me to two things.
Okay.
One of the reasons why we've created our software, because people have a hard time finding their real stuff.
Right.
And two, I think a lot of people start with a partner that they think they can mold and change into being what they want, and so they go to work the first day trying to get that person to be something different. So how do we choose the right person in the first place?
Well, it's interesting. Like we said, Ariel and I have been together 26 years, and I for sure was not the right person.
Okay.
I mean, if you ask my mother-in-law, I know she'd tell you now that I was, but then I was definitely not the right person.
Well, you know, I have a... Do you have more to that answer?
No.
You know, I'll tell you, when Chai says that, I have to laugh because it's so true. Your right person is made up from pictures based on what you've been trained and what you know in the past. Now, I don't know, Sherry, if you have a copy of our book or if you're up on Amazon, you see that picture of us, or up on our website, which is transformationmadeeasy.com. That's a current picture of us. Shai is 68 years old. I'm 17 years younger than him.
Actually, right now you're 18
years younger.
That's
right, because he just had a birthday. Mine is not until April. So and I was so busy trying to find my husband and finally got frustrated and I said, oh, man, forget this. Let me go ask him out. There'll be no pressure because he's old enough to be my father, so we could just go out and have a good time.
And we did, and the good time has rolled on.
I think one of the things that first happens with people when they are dating is they put a pressure on themselves to not actually date. They're not telling themselves the truth.
They're looking for the one or for a relationship or a marriage. So it's not that they're just going out to have fun with other people and then discover the people that they have the most fun with they should probably hang with.
So one of the things we generally suggest to people is if you can manage it, date more than one person. Now, of course, everybody's morality is different. So if intimacy with anybody, a physical intimacy with more than one person is not on, it feel right to you, we're not saying that you need to push out in that arena if that's not what your thing is, but dating more than one person, what happens is
you find that you feel differently with different people. And with one person, you may be very serious. And another person, you might have a really light and fun time. And another person, all you can think of is your childhood.
Or another person, you can't seem to string sentences together in a way that you seem to make sense. And if you're only with one person, you think, oh, man, I'm stupid. But maybe you start to realize you're like a piano, and when you're with person A, one tune is always played, and when you're with person B, a different tune is played.
So maybe there's nothing wrong with you. You see, that's our premise. our premise is that there's nothing wrong with people. They've been raised in a culture. I don't know if I mentioned it, but our approach is anthropological, and an anthropologist studies cultures. So I'm really excited about being on your show, because in hearing about your software, it's very exciting to me, because I very much see human beings like computers that have been programmed by the culture in which they've been raised, and they absorb the culture like a download in its entirety, and then they function through it as if it's the truth. Now, it is one truth, but it isn't the truth. It's the truth in that conditioned program. Tracking?
Mm-hmm. You guys look great, by the way.
Thank you. So in that program, you believe the truth of the program, because you've never even thought to question it. Now, you may have thought to question it, but see, our internal process, our minds function like a computer, and if there hasn't been a system upgrade, you're still functioning off of what you learned or were in resistance to in your childhood, and that's what dictates most people's lives. That's why people have these series of unfulfilling relationships that all have similar endings or middles and or beginnings, and they're not what they really want.
You know, way back at the beginning of this show, when we first started talking with you, because so much has already happened, you were talking to us about relationship, and I was suggesting if you're not in a relationship, you start with yourself. Well, even if you are in a relationship, start with yourself. Your question is about why people get into a relationship with somebody, and then they start trying to fix and change them. Well, here's what happens. In the privacy of our own thoughts, if you tell the truth, the person that you're generally the hardest on is you. If you do 10 great things today and one that you don't agree with, one you think you blew, you generally think about
the one you blew,
not the things you did great. And most of us, if we really blow it, you call yourself something unkind, something like dummy or worse. And of course, as soon as you connect up with somebody and they get inside the veneer that you normally show to most people on the day-to-day level, you're going to treat your partner the way you treat yourself. And you're going to try and fix them the same way
you're trying to fix you. That's why we wrote the first book called Working on Yourself Doesn't Work.
Do people need that one first before they do this?
No. They're all three of the books are standalone, and we give enough of our technology as a background in each book. These books are more than just a this book is more than just a relationships book. Basically, it's a textbook that will allow people to free themselves from the conditioning of the culture they were raised in.
They're all set up so that people can feel good in their own skin. So we do our best not to give people another system that they need to apply and try to improve. It's so that you can, in fact, we even recommend that people read the book kind of like a romance novel or a sci-fi or something that's not, quote, good for you, but just something just for fun. And if you stop working on yourself long enough,
Things that you
haven't been enjoying just fall away all on their own.
You know, we just got back in the country from doing winter workshops in Costa Rica, where we take people for either a week or 2 weeks. So we had 109 people over 2 weeks, 55 in 1 week, 54 in the next, where they came with us to Costa Rica, and we stayed at a beautiful resort in the rainforest, and people rode horses, and we did zip lines, and we did all kinds of good stuff, and we had a lot of course time, too, where we asked people to leave their history behind, leave their family behind, leave work behind, clear their schedule so they could be there for that week or two. And the most amazing thing happened for people. They left their story behind long enough that they forgot it. So they came back as different people. They still had the same families, they still had the same circumstances, but in that week's vacation from their story lost its power over their life.
kind of a reboot.
Exactly, kind of a reboot. A reboot and a system upgrade.
It's more like when you download something and they say, restart your computer now to activate it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Question.
Yeah, we're ready.
It's an odd one. What do you think about dating service?
Dating services?
If it's a way for you to meet people, I think it's a great idea. Because most people are so shy. And a lot of people don't want to go to places where people normally meet, like bars. So dating services may serve a really wonderful, you know, this electronic age we live in is just marvelous, that we could have this radio show and so many people all over the world can listen to it. That's fabulous. And these online dating services are providing a service for people to meet people that they would not normally meet that might be a fit.
Yeah, there's a couple who came with us to Costa Rica, and they met through a dating service, and they spoke on the phone. They ended up meeting at a local bar, because they lived pretty close. And I remember when the fellow was talking about it at one of our workshops the first night, about how different she was, and how when she actually listened to him, it was like somebody lit a spotlight on him, and he'd never felt so good in his entire life, and he was so happy to be with her. And you know what's really neat is this gal is a big gal. She's not like your model, thin. She's a big, robust, heavy gal. And I love that they use this dating service to find each other, to find the opportunity to meet, because it's challenging. So any way you can do it in this day and age, you just have to recognize that sometimes people write emails or sound better over the phone than they will in person, and some people will sound better in person than they will, because poor Shias, he had to do it via
email
service. You know, he's a hunt and peck typer.
A dyslexic hunt and peck typer. So it would be three words a minute, you know?
So you may not get totally accurate representation, so you can't, you know, feel bad about yourself if you meet somebody and they're not exactly for you, but it makes opportunities.
Yeah, you know, it fits into your dynamic of meeting more than one person, dating, I think you said, more than one person at a time. It's a
mm-hmm.
good opportunity to multitask there.
Yeah, multi-date.
You know, she said something else that caught me, though. Sherry, Ariel said something about this gal who listened to the fellow, and they've since become engaged and such. You know, listening is a skill set that most of us are really lacking in. We listen through what we already know, so we don't actually hear what a person is saying from their point of view. Most of us listen to see if we already know what's being said, or whether we agree or disagree with what's being said. Very rarely do we listen to hear another person's point of view, especially where we are not having an answer in our own thoughts at the same time.
Boy, this next question really fits into that. This is from our audience, too, and then I want to ask you about your workshop. This lady, I think it's a lady, says, my partner interrupts me all the time. Most of the time he finishes things far afield of where I was going in the first place. I've asked him not to do this. I've asked him why he's doing it. I've tried ignoring him. I just stopped talking to him when he does it to me. Any suggestions how I can turn this around in a positive way?
Yeah, I would suggest, what's this person's name?
Does it give you a name?
June, yes. If you're listening, June, I would suggest you do something really radical, like listen to him. Listen to him to hear what he has to say. Now, I know this seems off the wall, but and it's not being sexist. What I'm suggesting is that you can transform another person's way of listening if you actually hear what they're saying.
So when he breaks in and finishes your sentences in an odd way, you can do one of two things. You can either resist him, which is first principle, what you resist persists and will interrupt you more often and more inaccurately. Or you can recognize this is simply his way of listening right now. And if you stop and listen to what he has to say without continuing going where you're going, you may be surprised that what he has to say either has value or it changes the conversation.
But you see, the thing is, most people don't listen to other people. Our minds are these incredibly facile machines that can process like 3,000 words a minute. And so in the gaps between what we're saying, people's minds go off to different things. That's why I said by learning how to intentionally listen, to train yourself to intentionally listen to other people will bring you into the moment, which is an amazing thing, where transformation is a byproduct. So there's this personal transformation in your life happens when you listen as though what's being said is all there is to hear, rather than interject your thoughts, agreements, disagreements, knowing. If you leave that alone and really listen to hear what another person has to say from their point of view, that will produce magic everywhere in your life. Simple, easy, quick.
You think what Guy is wanting is just attention from her, from what she's saying? So by giving him that attention and listening to him, that would satisfy it?
It is possible, but there's another possibility too, Sherry. And, you know, prior to Shai and I having this fundamental shift, because we didn't start out to be as insane.
In a magical
relationship. We were in a normal relationship that had all the foibles. And so
idiosyncrasies, like we would bicker, we would finish each other's sentences that way.
So, June, if it can work for us, it can work for you. And here's another place to look. Back before our PT, prior to transformation, Shia would break in on me from time to time, but there was always a reason for it. One is I often didn't know what my point was, so I was wandering around trying to find it, and his way of thinking would interject because it was challenging to have to listen to me wander around. So you may want to just play a game with yourself before you even say anything. Think to yourself, and my point is, and then when you go to speak to him, see if you can start with your point and be direct rather than wandering around to get to it. That may not be the case for you, but it absolutely was for me, that Shia would only break in on me when I really didn't know, I wasn't clear what I wanted to say.
Is this the kind of thing that you teach and share with people in your workshop?
Yes. I mean, yes, of course. Our workshops are not much different from this conversation. We don't do things to try to change or fix people at all. In fact, we make people a promise that we're not going to try to change them or fix them, because we don't think they're broken, but they're operating frequently with a faulty system. You know, on our boat, we have a boat, and on the boat, we have a GPS.
The global positioning system. They have them in cars a lot now, but originally they had them for boats.
Right, and planes. And so this was an expensive unit, and it was the top of the line when we got it, and it would crash on us all the time, though. It would just turn itself off at the most inopportune times.
The screen would simply go blank.
And we're 20 miles out in the ocean, and it's foggy, and you don't know where you are, and boom, it would go out. And so we'd play with the wires and try to get it started again, and we'd eventually get it started, and it would do it again and again and again. And so finally I called Garmin about it, and they said, well, what system are you operating on? And I was not a technophile. I said, I don't know what you mean. They said, turn the machine on and it'll come up with a number, and that's the system. So I turned it on and it went. 0.18. And I said, 0.18. Well, he says, well, now we're on 6.5.2. So they sent me a new system. And on a little chip, and I put it into the Garmin, you know, into the GPS, and it downloaded that chip, and I had a new system. We have never had a problem with that machine since. It's never failed since.
You know, there's something that you said at the beginning of the show, Sherry, about personal responsibility that just really touched me. And you ask if that was what we teach in our courses. Our courses allow people to have control of their own life, to be personally responsible. Like with June, takes two to fight.
One to stop the fight, and it always has to be...
you. Whoever the you is. In my case, it has to be me.
In my case, it has to be me. If we fight, it's my responsibility to stop that fight.
And vice versa. For me, it's me.
So we don't fight very much.
So like 60-60.
If at all.
Like 60-60. We have a couple...
No, like 100-100.
Ah, okay. I'll agree. We have a couple of, there's three here, questions are real challenges, and it's kind of obvious that these people need your help.
all right, pick one. We're ready.
Yeah, we're ready.
Okay. This is a funny one. I shouldn't say that.
Don't say that. Just read it. And we promise not to laugh.
Yeah, I'll read another one instead so they won't know which one it is. Okay,
Our
house have an issue with dirty laundry. He drops it in there. I've tried putting baskets where he drops the stuff and he just puts it beside the basket.
That is funny.
I've tried just leaving it. It just piles up and stinks. Our conversations end with, don't make your problem my problem. How does one deal with such passive-aggressive behavior? My apologies for laughing. That is terrible that I'm laughing here. I can just see this woman's plight just standing there like, what do I do now?
Okay, so Sherry, I don't think that dirty laundry is the essence of their relationship. I have the sense that these guys have a bicker about a lot of things, and that's his way. You know, people know how to push other people's buttons. We learn it as children. And so that's his way of getting back at her for something else, whatever that might be.
So it is a passive thing.
You know, I have a really odd response for this one.
Go for it, baby.
I have this challenge. I love to do laundry. So you could play a game with yourself. Whatever this person's name is, you could play a game with yourself and say yes to the behavior. Yes, yes. Look, it's in the middle of the floor. Yes. Where you go about picking things up as if it's your idea, with the intention to have fun with the experience.
See, most people are no to what shows up in their lives. Most people disagree with the way life is showing up. It should be different. It doesn't fit our preferences. And so we say no. Ariel and I have discovered how to say yes to our lives, to what life requests of us. There are dishes in the sink. It's a request that they be washed. So we wash them. And we don't complain and victimize ourselves that we have to do them. We just do what needs to get done in our life. That makes our life incredibly streamlined because there aren't all these incompletions that litter the playing field.
I really back what you had to say, though, Shai, that this is just one symptom of an ongoing power struggle between these two people. It's like you can either be frustrated.
Well, it's like when we have some friends, Caitlin and Rod, who when we first met them, when they first came to a workshop with us, we were then doing winter workshops in Chile as well as Costa Rica. And so
they came and they had a fight and they had a temper tantrum. They took all their clothes out of their bags
and
they threw them in the middle of the floor and said, fine, you clean it up. And then, of course,
they lived with it for a few days. you know, they got over that. They don't do that anymore.
But I can, with this lady, I can just see she thinks that he thinks she's the mother and he should be waited on and she feels unappreciated and, you know, it's just round and around.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, there's a few things. One, no offense and not to be disrespectful, but you picked him. And the other thing, too, is, like, I know that in my relationship with Shia, when we had habits that we had to keep looking and saying, is that habit worth
our relationship?
Our relationship. And for me, I was really clear that there were certain things that if I kept doing them, the relationship would be over. Or if there were certain things that Shia kept doing, the relationship would be over. And it's not necessarily that we talked about those things at the time, but it was just like I got very clear what was okay with me and what was not. And if in a relationship, if you're clear about that,
See, here's the thing. Relationships, satisfaction in relationships are not circumstantially determined. So if a person does what you want, so with this lady, her man leaves dirty laundry around. And she says that that's the reason she's dissatisfied with the relationship. But I'll tell you something. If he picked up the laundry, there'd be some other reason for being dissatisfied.
So in your workshop, do you show people how to talk to each other about this stuff?
No, we don't actually work with people in that respect, because usually what happens is if a person takes their attention off their, quote, problems and really gets engaged in being where
they are in that moment,
the problem goes away at the same time. We've had it many times where one individual will come to a workshop. We won't even talk about their relationship. Their partner will stay home because they're just not into that kind of thing, or they're fighting too much that they wouldn't do it together. And the woman, in this case, would go home, and suddenly her husband has cleaned the house, bought flowers, and prepared dinner, something that he's never done in the history of all the years they've been married. That something shifted
in the way she was being, and her universe shifted along with it. See, that's why our workshops aren't problem solution oriented. They're about discovering how to live your life in the current moment of your life rather than carrying your story of your past into the present moment, rather than carrying a list of grievances about how they did it wrong. See, our workshops are a lot about forgiving ourselves and our partners for the past, because the past has already happened and we can do nothing about it. And forgive means to give up the right to punish.
Well, I have maybe an alternative idea here about why he cleaned up the house and made lunch and got flowers. He may see that she's seeking a solution that she can't find with him, and he wants to do better.
It's entirely possible, but, you know, your idea is very valid, except for in this particular instance, I happen to know that this lady did a lot of workshops. So she'd been doing lots of different things. Something just happened. It was really miraculous.
Well, I was trying to lead to the next person. We have two more. Let me see if there's more than two in the queue here. There's two more things came in, and both of them are complicated.
Okay.
Trying to lean into he may find out she's not satisfied and seeking elsewhere. And I'm trying to make this short because it's got three paragraphs here. My husband is not a competent lover, but he certainly thinks he is. He refuses to listen to any request, insisting that he knows what's appropriate. Sometimes I just tolerate his need to keep from fighting. I do a better job myself. Any hope for this one?
Yes.
I used to be that way.
I thought I knew what I was doing. I was arrogant. I was an arrogant, stupid man who thought I knew more what would satisfy my wife than she did. Now, that's the epitome of stupidity and arrogance, wouldn't you think?
And how did you think?
You can say it. I won't offend myself.
So how did you shift that?
Well, we actually hired a sex coach, and I listened. Actually, listening was the key.
You know, if your guy is not listening to you and is sure that he knows how to do it better, if I cast my thoughts way back to when this happened, like 24, it was right around when
we first got married,
years ago, prior to transformation even, that what I hadn't recognized was that Shiat was bigger than me, and he was a successful guy in business, and he was accomplished in his own right, but inside, he was still insecure in himself. And to overcome the insecurity, there's kind of this bluster and bluff. And you know, it would be okay if he admitted that he didn't know how to, say, cook or sail a boat or something. But to make love, you know, that's a whole different...
It challenges your male ego.
Your masculinity. And so when you say, any hope for this one? Yeah. But he's not going to let down his guard
if
he's not feeling safe.
Right. So if these two are fighting, if there's got to be some, you know, like an armistice of some sort.
Well, I'll tell you the other thing from that time frame for me, because I could do it better myself in that time frame. But here was the deal. Shy would do something, and I'd think, oh, man, it'd be better if it was a little harder or softer, to the left or with the lights on or with the lights off or the more music or less music. And the challenge was this. Shy was very responsive to me. At some point, he got very responsive, and he started listening, and I'd make the requests, and I wasn't happy anyway. When he actually fulfilled everything I thought would make it feel better, it didn't work. So what I realized at that point was I needed to learn how to let go and be intimate and to surrender to him. And then everything he did was actually wonderful.
You see, if there's a difference between surrendering to your life and succumbing to your life. If you succumb to your life, a person does something or makes a suggestion and you victimize yourself with it. You may go along with it and do it, but you do not have a good time and you make them pay for it.
Or in this case, given the way you've structured your question, caller or writer, because he's your emailer, you hurt yourself with it. You are not letting yourself have pleasure.
And so... succumb is when you do what's requested of you, but you are victimized by it, or you don't have pleasure out of it, or you complain about it, or you hold a grudge about it that you had to do it in the first place.
Yeah.
And surrender is when you do what's requested of you by life or your boyfriend or girlfriend, and you agree to have it be wonderful as though it were your idea. In fact, the thing that saved our relationship early on was we had an agreement, Ariel and I, that if either one of us wanted sex, the other would
go about having sex as if it were we were the initiator and with the intention to have it be wonderful. So it may be a game to play is to operate as if the way you're going about having sex is your idea in the first place.
And it's the way you want it to be, and you find a way to find pleasure in it rather than complain that it's not the way you want it, because I guarantee there are many areas of your life that you're dissatisfied and complaining to yourself that life is not showing up the way you want it. And sex is just one area.
Well, and, you know, when Shai says that, please don't misunderstand. He's not saying that's a failing on your part. That's the starting place for every person I've ever met, including myself, including Shai, where you start from a place where you're saying no to what is, where you're complaining about what you've got, where you're not having pleasure or you're not satisfied and you look around and it's always somebody's fault or some place where you pick on yourself for it or you pick on your parents, that's the starting place. This is not a bad thing.
This is normal. This is where people are. People are always looking for life to be different than it is, even though, second principle, it can only be exactly as it is in this moment. How is that, Sherry, for an answer?
Yeah, that is a great answer. And this was not signed.
It's okay.
So answer would be pretend you're having a good time and you just might.
Well,
okay.
Yeah. The fake it till you make it school, right.
You know, in our first book, Working on Yourself Doesn't Work, we talk about this possibility. It's an analogy as if there are two houses and you have to pay rent for either house or a mortgage payment. You can only live in one of them. They're across the street from each other. You can only live in one. There's the alive house, and then there's the right house. And in the alive house, you get to have pleasure and intimacy and relationship and well-being. And in the right house, you get to be right.
Yeah, you get to keep a list of transgressions, how the other person did it wrong. But it's always you're right, they're wrong, and that's the right house.
Now, both have rent to pay. If you want to live in the live house,
you have to give up being right. That's the rent.
And if you want to live in the right house,
you have to give up aliveness.
And all the things that go in that house.
You know, the experience of love and health and happiness, full self-expression, relationship, partnership, all that has to go to be right.
You know, and here's the challenge. Sometimes you're accurate.
Yes. It's a challenge.
That's a very great concept. We have six more questions that just came in, but I just picked one. I think this one's more complicated because the other one's about Obama and Michelle's relationship. And okay, it says, I'm married to two people that live in one body. I never know how to approach him. One minute he's open and receptive, the next snide and snippy. He can move from being appreciative to verbally abusive in an instant. I feel like I'm in a constant dance to figure out what's going on. Will your book help me to transform my beast?
The answer is the book will definitely help. And if you hold him as a beast, he will show up as a beast. What you're not looking at is your part, the things you may be doing unawarely and unintentionally that offend, men have big bodies and we look like we're secure, but most men are very insecure and get hurt very easily, and it doesn't take much to shut them down.
And you know, let's assume that he does have this snippy side, but it doesn't mean that you have to evoke it. Think Velcro.
Yeah, Velcro is a great analogy here.
Velcro has two sides, hooks and fluff. So in order to have this dynamic happen between the two of you, you've got to have hooks and fluff. So if you dissolve the hooks in you, he's not going to get fluffy.
His fluff will have nothing to grab onto. Or if you dissolve the fluff in you, his hooks have nothing to grab.
So that's where we say it's 100% your responsibility. You can't control your partner. You can't change your partner. But there may be things that you're unwittingly doing that evoke that. And I can tell you from time to time in the past, if one or the other of us have come to initiate a conversation with the other and we haven't stopped to see if the other person is involved in something, our partner is not as responsive.
Well, here's the other thing. If you or I are trying to do something to change one another, it isn't pretty.
Nobody likes to be
changed. Nobody likes to have people work on them to try to change them. And so, you know, we don't have the specifics of this person's relationship, but like Ariel said, if you're kind to yourself, you'll be kind to your partner. And that may have a lot to do in this person's particular situation.
You know, I love the questions from your listeners, Sherry, but there is something I've noticed in that they seem, in a certain respect, well-rehearsed. For certain well-rehearsed to themselves, you practice them and you crystallize the complaint in your head, and I'd be willing to bet that most of these ladies, at least the ones that we spoke to were ladies, have spoken to their friends about it and have gotten agreement. Man, that's such a challenge, but it's such a dangerous thing because you can get agreement and you can stick your guy in a place that you're not going to want him to be, because by force of agreement, you know how guys are. And then before you know that, you've put them there. You create the beast.
Right.
And you keep them.
Right. And you know, if somebody like one of your girlfriends says, if she doesn't have a great relationship, I wouldn't listen to her advice on relationship. That's the first thing. Because I would only take relationship advice from somebody who has a good relationship.
We're out of time. We have four more questions. Just let me know if there are some answers to this in your book, and then we'll talk about that for 1 minute, and then we got to go. Is fighting okay? Wouldn't somebody get run over if there wasn't fighting? What's fair in disagreement? Any advice for older couples set in their ways? What's the early training to see that the magic never leaves?
All of that is
in the book.
All of it. How to create a magical relationship. Shia and Ariel, thank you for being with us. We've got to go. I'm really sorry. The reviews are incredible on your book. It's less expensive at Amazon, $10.85, although they do have it at Borders, but it's $14.
So buy it from Amazon. It's a bargain.
Absolutely incredible reviews. This book will help you create vital, supportive partnerships that flow smoothly day in and day out, not just when things are easy. That's a great recommendation. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
And you know, people can practice. TransformationMadeEasy.com is our website. We have podcasts every week. We have articles of the month. There's a blog there where people talk. Obviously, your listeners are very interactive. Come check out our site. See what we have to offer. If it's for you, partake.
That's wonderful. I'm sorry I forgot to add that for people.
Well, hey, we have so appreciated being on your show. I love that you have the listening audience that you do that has asked these questions, because they're great questions. There's a new technology that will transform your relationships and your life. It's called instantaneous transformation, and it really works.
Well, we'll bring you back to talk about your other book.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be in touch, Sherry. Thank you so much for having us.
Bye now.
Bye.
The lovers and the lawyers and the self-employer were in the foyer sipping tea, discussing with the Russian who was munching on a muffin, all about the Main Street Blues. And if, oh Lord, in the and oh Lord, in this the tailor and the teller and